I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tim Dillon Show live from Dubai, our new home, our new set. We're very excited to be broadcasting and building a comedy scene in the United Arab Emirates. This is our new studio. It's here, and we are here queering the space of podcasting every day. And it's suicidal to be a podcaster now because it is the golden age of TV. I don't know if you've seen that article. There are 599 scripted shows, more than at any point in our nation's history. There are 599 scripted shows. It's on Drudge. It is the golden age of TV. There are more streaming services, more shows that no one watches. So it's crazy for us. Scripted series volume hits all-time high in 2021. The annual estimate of shows from FX jumps 13% after a one-year dip in 2020. But the shows are back. TV is back. No one knows what that means. No one knows how to watch any of these shows. But there are a lot of television shows like Bull. Have you seen Bull? Look up Bull. Bull.
It's a drama.
Bull. Why is Bull being canceled? In May 2020, Bull was renewed for a fifth season, with the further announcement in October 2020 that the season would be trimmed to 16 episodes. Well, that's not enough Bull. What is Bull about? Dr. Jason Bull is the charming and cocky founder of a successful trial consulting firm, Trial Analysis Corporation, where he and his team of experts employ psychology, human intuition, and high-tech data to understand jurors, lawyers, witnesses, and defendants, and construct effective narratives to help their clients win. Bull's team includes his brother-in-law, Benny, neurolinguistics expert, Marissa, former detective, Danny, hacker, Cable, and Chunk, who helps perfect clients' appearances for trial. Bull is inspired by the early career of Dr. Phil McGraw, who also serves as an executive producer. Bull is the story of Dr. Phil.
113 episodes.
113 episodes of Dr. Phil's origin story. So thank you for spending time with us here instead of Bull. We're here in Los Angeles, California, where people are being murdered in furniture stores. This is a tragic situation. A young woman was at her job at a furniture store and ended up getting stabbed to death. And this is insane. They're asking for help. The LAPD is asking for help solving furniture store employee killing on La Brea in Hancock Park. It's like a nice area of LA. This is a high-end furniture store. This is the problem with a lot of what's going on right now. The supply chain is wreaking havoc. And if you tell somebody they're going to get a sectional in 6 months and they don't have it, they're getting emotional. And they're going in and they're taking it out on the store employees. And this is not right. And this is a tragic situation. The state is descending into hell very quickly. And there's nothing funny about this. The suspect attacked a victim with a knife and fled the scene through the back door. The suspect was seen on security video casually walking down the back alley of the business. He's described as a black male, unknown age, tall, thin, wearing a dark hoodie, sunglasses, a white N95 mask, responsible, dark skinny jeans, dark shoes, carrying a dark backpack. Well, based on evidence discovered by detectives, the suspect is believed to be homeless. Now, this is weird because I'm under the impression that all people without homes are inherently good. That's the impression that I've been under, is that all people that are living in a tent or don't have a house or are spending most of their time out on the street are good people. It's odd that one of them stabbed a woman to death in a furniture store, but apparently not all of these homeless people are thrilled with being homeless. It's not all fun and games. You know, Echo Park, which is a part of Los Angeles, they had this like homeless encampment there. And it was this, you know, fantasy this utopian fantasy where liberal white women would go and deliver avocados to a lot of these people, some of them hopelessly addicted to fentanyl. And every now and then there'd be a knife fight or an overdose, but people really loved the community. And it was sad when the community was destroyed. But what we have to start realizing is that a lot of these homeless people, sadly, seem to be unwell. They don't seem to be doing great. And having them walk around the city with knives is probably not good. Is that okay to say? Is that all right to say? Or am I going to piss someone off? Is someone mad at that? Is the stabbing good or bad? Is the homeless guy stabbing the woman in the furniture store a net positive or a net negative? I think it might be bad. And that makes me an alarmist boomer psychopath obsessed with the crime statistics. Just because I think someone should have the right to work at a furniture store. And you know these people, they're hearing shit all day from people like me that walk in and go, "Where's the fucking couch?" And they're screaming and yelling. And I'm not even saying these furniture store people should be treated exceptionally well. Truly. I mean, we're all fucking spending a lot of money and none of us are getting our shit. So we're angry. But you should stop short of stabbing them, right? I mean, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't separate them from their consciousness. But again, we've got a real problem in the city of Los Angeles. And people that point it out... are themselves targeted for being alarmists and crazy. But, you know, RIP to this young woman. This is a fucking tragedy. I completely understand. You know, now, and so then we have the LAPD. So you go, well, what is the LAPD doing? Well, the LAPD, God help us, this is a quote from the LAPD. Two Los Angeles cops fired for ignoring robbery to chase a Snorlax in Pokemon Go, which is rare. The Snorlax is the big fat Pokemon, and it's rare. And so this is what happened. LA Police Department officers Louis Lozano and Eric Mitchell were fired for ignoring a robbery in progress because they were too busy chasing a Snorlax. They appealed their termination in court but were denied. The official court opinion document is really something else. For example, this is what it says. For approximately the next 20 minutes, the digital in-car video system in the squad car captured petitioners discussing Pokemon as they drove to different locations where the virtual creatures apparently appeared on their mobile phone. So this is who we're hiring on the police force. This is also part of the problem. The police are playing Pokemon Go, a game that hasn't been hot for 3 years, okay?
That's right.
Wait till they discover augmented reality, like the new shit coming down the pike. I mean, can you imagine where these... Wait till they find out about Twitch. I mean, nothing will get done. So on their way to the Snorlax location, because Snorlax, if you haven't played Pokemon Go, these are creatures, they're Pokemon, and you gotta catch them all, not criminals. But the Pokemon, gotta catch them all. Sadly, Snorlax wasn't in that furniture store where that woman was getting beheaded. So Officer Mitchell alerted Officer Lozano that a Togetic, T-O-G-E-T-I-C, just popped up. Mm. Noting, I don't know what that means. Noting that it was on Crenshaw just south of 50th after Mitchell apparently caught the Snorlax, exclaiming, "Got him!" Petitioners, again, not the criminal. The Snorlax. Petitioners agreed to go get the whatever that is and drove off. But when their car stopped again, the camera recorded Mitchell saying, "Don't run away, don't run away." While Lozano described how he, quote, buried it and ultra-balled the, I don't know what that word
means. It's a Pokemon, the Togetic.
Okay, Togetic is a Pokemon. Mm-hmm. So he buried it and ultra-balled the Togetic before announcing, "Got him." Mitchell advised he was, quote, "still trying to catch it," adding, "Holy crap, man, this thing is fighting the crap out of me." Oh, God. Eventually, Mitchell exclaimed, "Holy crap, finally," apparently in reference to capturing the Tegetic, he remarked, "The guys are going to be so jealous." The guys, meaning the other cops, are doing this as well. The guys, they're not ashamed of this activity. They're not ashamed of this behavior. This is clout for them. They're going to go back to the squad and tell everybody that they caught a Snorlax. This is the LAPD, the Los Angeles Police Department. Petitioners then agreed to return to the 7-Eleven, where Sergeant Gomez later met them to end their watch. On the way, Mitchell remarked, "I got you a new Pokemon today, dude." So this is what the LAPD has been doing. They have been out trying to catch Pokemon Go while the city burns. This is proof. This is not probably a unique situation. Many of them are bragging to the other ones, "Look at the Pokemon I just got," while people are getting stabbed to death on the showroom of a furniture store. This is a problem. This is a, who are we hiring to be police, by the way? What is the psychological examination required to be a police officer? Apparently not much. Really, it's pretty sickening to hear this. Petitioners also denied playing Pokemon Go while on duty. They claimed they were monitoring a, quote, Pokemon tracker application on their phone, but not playing the game. So again, they are monitoring the Pokemon tracker while on duty as police. As for catching Pokemon, Officer Lozano insisted this referred to, quote, capturing an image of the Pokemon on the tracking application to share with friends. While Officer Mitchell said in his statements about fighting, the Tegetic referred to, quote, relaying that information to the groups on my app, adding that in order to take the picture, occasionally the creature will fight. Lozano said they were not engaged in a game. Rather, it was, quote, a social media event. Well, that's a problem, too. And it was a game. We know they're just trying to cover their ass. Mitchell said he did not consider the application a game because it was, quote, not advertised as a game. Petitioners admittedly leave. Imagine this. Imagine all the cops that have been let go over the last few years for shooting innocent people, overreacting, police brutality, corruption, things like that. Imagine these two idiots somehow getting fired for catching a Pokemon. Petitioners admitted leaving their foot beat area in search of Snorlax, but they insisted they did so both as part of an extra patrol and to chase the mythical creature. So they said this was kind of a kill two birds with one stone operation. We did a little extra patrol, and then it just so happened that we were trying to catch the Snorlax. Imagine going home and telling your wife why you got popped at work, why you got thrown out. It was because you were trying to catch a Snorlax. Now look at Snorlax. He's a big guy.
So this is the Togetic, the that's evolved the, Togepi.
Yeah, that's so the rare. Togetic is rare, but Snorlax, take a look at Snorlax. He's a big, powerful Pokemon. And I don't need any comments here like, "Oh, you're Snorlax." We don't need that in the YouTube. We don't need that. That's not productive. But that Snorlax, my friend has a big Snorlax pillow, which is kind of cool. It's like a chair. But he's also mentally ill. But he has a Snorlax chair in his home, and he's an adult. Logan Paul, I think they just beat him on $3.5 million of fake Pokemon cards.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I watched Gary V on the Full Send podcast. Very interesting about NFTs. We're having dinner with Gary, which will be exciting, and I'm excited about that. And he's either going to poison us, or we're going to leave there with a new business that we've started with him. We don't know, but I was watching that Full Send podcast about NFTs and about, you know, the possibilities of what NFTs will be in the future, and it was an interesting thing. And our friend John Shahidi's big into those NFTs, big into collecting things, and I think Gary was pretty honest. He said, you know, 98% of projects in the NFT world are going to zero, meaning they'll be worth nothing. But then there's 2% of projects that'll be worth something. And then the technology behind this all, Web3, will somehow be inevitable. Web2 does feel like it's at the end, right? Go on Facebook and see Web2. Web2 is your family on Facebook, sharing photos and opinions about their life and ideas. And that does feel like we've had just quite about enough of Web 2. It makes more sense to trade apes back and forth than to listen to your uncle sound off on the state of the affairs. So Web 2 is on its way out, and in comes Web 3. You can now own things digitally. You may be able to own an NFT of something, and if we did an NFT line, we'd want to give people more shit than just an image. We'd want to give them maybe an exclusive podcast or tickets to a show. You know, it's all about the community. This is what I hear, and it's all about the community. That's why are you laughing? That's what it is. It's about the community.
It's the community.
It's about building a community. We don't have families anymore, so you got to build a community. There's no Knights of Columbus. Nobody goes bowling. There was a great book called Bowling Alone. So we have to build a community around apes, the photos of apes, because that's how communities are built in the digital space. I have a gutter cat. Look up gutter cat. This is a community. I have a gutter cat and you have a gutter cat. We should be friends. It's the creation of communities. So there's a gutter. I kind of want a gutter cat.
12,000 of them. These are cool.
They're a little cheaper than the apes, which are now trading in the $300,000 to $400,000 range. At least these communities are not based solely on hate, which is the political communities, right? I mean, it's better than that. The hype beasts are better than January 6th, right? If the people at January 6th, instead of running into the Capitol building and taking selfies in the gayest and dumbest revolution ever in the history of the world, if instead of doing that, they just went to a place and showed each other their gutter cats, that would be better. That would be an improvement. It would be an improvement if a bunch of those people, if Antifa, instead of burning down buildings, met somewhere and showed each other their shoes. That would be better. So maybe this is how we have to create communities, because the way we're creating them right now isn't good. We're venerating genocidal ideologies that have long been discredited, and we're going out into the streets to raise hell, all to no effect. We're not causing any positive change. Nobody's lives are actually better than they were 2 years ago. The government is completely unaffected by most of this. They just kind of egg it on. They're not threatened by any of it. They're egging it on. They kind of like it. They kind of like people being scared and divided. So none of this is a revolution in the sense that the government is changing any of their operating principles. So it seems to be just a way for a lot of people to blow off steam. Well, if you're going to blow off steam and end up in jail for 10 years, federal prison, why don't you just get a fucking ape? Go get a gutter cat. Go get a lazy lion. And just show people that you own the thing that they own. I own this, you own that. I was criticized for the community of Tesla owners, which you're a part of, because many of them are insane. And many of their identity has become SpaceX and Elon Musk. You own a fucking car, but it doesn't matter because now they're in a community and they have little meetup groups where these psychopaths go and they rate the different electronic charging stations and what's better. And well, that one usually has a line. And well, what restaurants have electronic charging? I want to charge my Tesla while I eat. And they have all these fucking horrible, strange, weird things that they discuss because their life centers around the fucking car they drive. So if we're going to do that, we're going to build these communities, digital communities, then maybe we should just build them around pictures of animals. What's wrong with that? I don't see anything inherently wrong with that. Perhaps it's a scam, but it's certainly no worse than any other scam that's been out there. I'm excited for this dinner. I want to come out of it. I want to be an NFT trillionaire. If it gives people more freedom, I'm in. That's where I look at crypto. People go, where do you stand on it? Are you making fun of it or do you like it? Hey, I'm here's where I am with it. If it increases people's freedom and it allows people, creators, consumers, to do more shit and they don't have to rely on legacy institutions that are rotting and crumbling and have all been you know, perverted by all kinds of different financial incentives and ideologies. If you can detach and get away from all that and support the people that you like, and creators and artists and people can issue these NFTs as a way to build their own you know, brand and build their own career outside of a hopelessly corrupt system, then good. If it's just a pump and dump scheme, well, then good too. If people pump and dump at the right time. But if you're looking at it long term, you go, I hope, just like Patreon, just like any of these things that have allowed people to have careers outside of the mid. The reason that we're hated, by the way, and Rogan's taking a lot of heat now because apparently he said a few things about this vaccine. Have you heard any of that? I haven't. Apparently he's weighed in on this vaccine controversy. I have not heard anything about it, but he is getting a lot of flack and he's taken some positions that people don't like. But the bigger reason that they hate him, and a lot of them don't like me, and they hate people that are making a living on the internet, whether it's podcasting or doing whatever, is because most of the people in Hollywood live in fear. Everyone in this town, whether they have $100 million or no money, they live in fear. They live in fear of losing their job. They live in fear of becoming irrelevant. They live in fear of not being able to satiate the bloodthirsty mob on Twitter. That's why a lot of comedians we know spend most of their time apologizing for past indiscretions. They deliver pound of flesh to the mob, pound of flesh to the mob. The mob chews it up. Patton Oswalt does a guest spot on Dave Chappelle's show. People go, you transphobic monster. And he's got to write a soliloquy. He's got to write the beginning of a novel. I must continue to educate myself on them. I hold forth these truths to be self-evident. And they live in fear. And they live in fear because their money gets turned on and off like a faucet. They turn the money on, they turn the money off. And when they turn the money on, things are good. Things are good. There's big houses in Los Feliz with swimming pools. There's red carpets. There's people that care. There's profiles in the New York Times. What makes you tick? How did you get so funny? Did you always know you're funny? How does that work? Like, you're like so creative. I wish I was you. What does your cum taste like? Does it taste as creative as you? And they write all these articles about you and you're great. You're the first woman to ever do anything. How does it feel? How does it feel to be the first woman to ever walk the earth? And all of these articles get written and people get really excited. They get really excited and you know, you go into the coffee shop and people go, oh, it's you. They get a little excited. The barista gets excited. You walk in, they go, oh yeah, I didn't want to see anything, but I know who you are. And you know, I just say, oh, you know, and you get excited and you start fucking people that are way out of your league. People that are much more attractive than you want to have sex with you because you're famous. And that's the elixir. That's the drug, the fame, and the fact that you matter. And you matter largely because an industry of people decided you should matter. They had a meeting and decided in a room that what you say should matter. Well, over the last few years, the ability of them to do that has waned. They can't do that as much. And a lot of those people that were famous and rich, they were coasting and they were told exactly what to say and how to say it. And they didn't say anything that would ruffle feathers. And they stayed in the line of this just kind of, you know, mainstream liberal, like, you know, after school special kind of Hallmark movie, feel good shit, and then retired to their mansions to do blow and have fun. Now what's happening is you have all these new people on the internet whose views and ideas are much more in line with the American public. Number one, we have views and ideas, right? We have thoughts. And those thoughts are actually more mainstream than a lot of these Hollywood actors and comedians that don't think at all and have made a career not really thinking about anything in a way that could upset or hurt their career. So when they go and do podcasts, they don't really do well because they're scripted and it's odd and stilted and they get on there and they basically try to just, they're not authentic and people can smell it and feel it and go, well, this isn't really working. And Hollywood right now and academia, they've kind of been captured. They've been captured by kind of radicals, right? People that hold views that are vastly different from the majority of the American people. And when most people in Hollywood don't really have these views, they just want to be rich. But then there are a few people that have these views and want these views telegraphed in every piece of art. So if you want to be in any of these things, you have to either hold these views or quietly abstain from ever challenging them. But that doesn't work online, right? It doesn't really work because people want authenticity. They want you to be real and say the shit that you feel and think, which is what Joe Rogan does. It's what I do. It's what people do. And you take heat for it and you take flack. But it works, and we make money, and we sell tickets. And the people that are part of that old system that are kind of dying are angry about it. They're not thrilled with that. This has never been a business where people really enjoy each other's success. That's not really what it is. I mean, you know, watch the award show. Somebody went, polite clown, yeah, whatever. People really just want each other to fail. There's not enough seats at the table. So these people are angry and they're mad, and then they're trying to grab the attention of tech and going, shut them down. Shut it off. Shut this off now. Shut it off. We want them to watch things that we make. Now we need them to know that we are the only option for entertainment. So that's why I read a million tweets a day that are subtweet. You know, they're always going at me. You know, in rap, they would be like, it's subliminals. They call me all these names. Well, I didn't get into comedy to be Rush Limbaugh. You know, never mind that the positions I advocate are vastly different from most mainstream conservatives. I don't like people getting stabbed at the furniture store. I do think that's wrong. That's now made me right wing. I don't realize where left wing became pro stabbing at the furniture store. But this is what you see happening. But they don't care about facts or reality. They just care that I have money and viewers and they don't. And that's really what it comes down to with Rogan has the platform, you know, so all these doctors signed this letter to Spotify, like, the misinformation it's wrong. And what Rogan's doing is having conversations with people that have a different view of how COVID should be treated. Many of them are advocating early treatment instead of vaccines. Now, you can have that debate. You can have that conversation. You shouldn't shut it down. You don't have to be an anti-vax lunatic to entertain a reasonable conversation. The vast majority, I think, of people that watch and enjoy Rogan are probably vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. A lot of people are vaccinated. But also at the third booster, when everyone's sick, it's also reasonable to have a conversation about, are these things working as well as you wanted them to work? But this is why you have the problems that you have. And they will continue. They'll continue until someone wins. Could be the internet. It could be, I don't know who's going to win. I've hedged my bets, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. But that's why people are angry. They're angry because if they're forced to compete in our world where they themselves have to have thoughts, opinions, and ideas and make them funny and be authentic, which is something they've never done and don't know how to do. They're creations. They don't exist. They're a character they've been playing for a very long time. Well, then they're going to fail miserably. So they need to be in a world where they're protected and insulated from that. You don't know what any of these people... And I don't want to know what actors think either. I just want to have this stop attacking us. I don't want to know what people... I don't want to know what Timothée Chalamet thinks about trade. Let them do whatever they're going to do. Entertain us, that's fine. But the anger seems to be sort of one way. I don't care that I'm not on Bull. But every comic and all of these people can't stand that there's now options out there. People don't have to listen to them. People don't have to buy a ticket to see them. It doesn't matter how many puff pieces they run on them at the Times or wherever. People have options now, and that's what they hate.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes... These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Imagine you're in a deep, dreamy sleep. You're at work. But instead of one of you, there are suddenly two, then three, then 10, then 100, until 1,000 of you are working to reach your goal. Now, imagine it's not a dream, because what's actually happening while you sleep is the power of Agentforce, a limitless digital workforce independently thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks on your behalf around the clock and elevating only what needs your attention. No more time-consuming busy work, just the really important stuff, like making happier customers. So while you're dreaming about flying, missing a flight, or being naked in front of a crowd, Agentforce is working to make you a lot more efficient, like 1,000 times more efficient. That's Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest, building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving, it's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
I want to apologize to Australia because I know I said that you all were criminals and lazy, and that's largely true. But a 10-year-old girl already owns two companies and could retire at 15 as a multimillionaire, and she's Australian, right? Mm-hmm. So I was wrong. She's the creator of Pixies Fidgets, a toy company originally bankrolled by the late Jeffrey Epstein. Pixies Fidgets. Pixies Fidgets made over $140,000 in the first month, according to news.com.au. Pixies Fidgets. Despite being still in elementary school, an Australian girl is on her way to retiring a multimillionaire. 10-year-old Pixie Curtis set up a toy company that's already making huge profits. With the help of her mother, Roxy Jacinto, Pixie founded it. So here's what happened. This girl didn't really do it, right? Her family did it, and they said, we need to put a 10-year-old as the face of this company. Isn't that what happened?
It seems that way.
It seems that way. I bet this girl, and I'm sure she's a lovely woman, but I don't believe she built this multi-million dollar business herself, right? I mean, this is probably her parents, and they probably said, you know what's a really great story? Mm-hmm. What's a great narrative is our Australian daughter, who, how old is she?
She's 15 now, but she started it when she was 10.
Right, she didn't. So 15, she's already a drunk. And she's already drunk and she's racist and she's screaming about Aboriginals and land. We know what her deal is. So now she's already probably drinking and she's like, oh, fuck you, what were you buying it? It's hard to do the Australian accent. It's hard because when I start doing accents, like, well, I'm not Australian, every now and then it just starts going into like, I then go did this and then I, hey, how are you doing? Like, it goes somewhere else. I just can't stay with one because I'm so cultured. I go around the world. But Pixie, we're supposed to believe that this 10-year-old started a company. None of this is true, right? What is this, a tax scam? What is this? She didn't start anything at 10. What are we talking about? Our family joke is I'll be working till I'm 100 and Pixie will have retired at 15. I certainly know who's smarter. That's what the mother said. But that's not true. How does she start a company at 10? I call the bullshit. Pixie's story has gained a large following on social media, amassing more than 100,000 followers on Instagram. Despite her success, her mother doesn't want Pixie to feel that she has to work for the company. What? Isn't it her company? Isn't it Pixie's company? Or are you lying? I've said it from day one. The moment Pixie doesn't want to be front-facing or involved with Pixie's picks and Pixie's bows, then we will reassess. But for now, she's happy learning so much. The minute she just wants to sit in the backyard drinking, we'll let her do that. What is Pixie's picks?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Oh, it's what are they just sell toys. So how does this work? They buy the toys from China or something and then sell them?
They probably have Chinese factories make them and then send them to them, yeah.
And then because it was started by a 10-year-old girl, people go, oh, good. It's fun. Pixie's fidgets. I bet like 10-year-olds are also making this.
Oh, so it's stress balls for children.
It's stress balls for children, some of it. Can you go on the heart bumpy stress ball? What a dystopian nightmarish toy. It's stress balls for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Children who are stressed out, instead of trying to figure out a way to make them unstressed, we're giving them balls to squeeze when they're terrified. That's what Pixie's fidgets is? Is that what it mean, like Pixie fidgets?
I think to keep your mind.
Yes, you can just fidget because your head is filled with existential dread from the moment you wake up to the moment you collapse in your bed in a cold sweat. So what you can do is fidget all day with these toys.
Yeah, there's the section for poppets. So like you can have a pencil case and you can just hit the pops. Like
so this whole entire line of toys is being marketed to children with emotional problems. Is that fair to say?
It would seem
fat brain toys. Simple Dimple. What is that? What is a fat brain toy?
So these are for babies to chew on.
Oh, these are for babies that can't control themselves. But that's what Pixie's Fidgets is. It's for children that have emotional issues. And they need to squeeze things. I'm not against this, but it is just a sign of the times that a lot of the toys being marketed to children now are some form of like Prozac Play-Doh or whatever that they need to play with. Like, it's not just a toy. It's a way to relieve all the stress you have at 9. Interesting. Pixie's Fidgets. We're doubling down on the mental illness here.
Yeah.
We're doubling it. We're not trying to get rid of any of it. We're actually going the other way, going, how much more of it can we get? And can we market? Because as soon as the capitalist machine gets into place, baby, everybody will be mentally ill. If you don't have a mental illness, you'll be a Nazi soon. Having a clear head will mean you're a fascist. You better get a mental, and I see in comedy, all these white guys get up, they're like, man, I'm just fucking, I got anxiety, depression, bipolar, tripod, I'm just fucked up. And some of them are, unquestionably, but some of them aren't. Like these guys, you go, I'm bisexual. And it's like, you're not. Somebody sucked your dick at college once when you were drunk. You're not, you have a fucking girlfriend. Stop trying to save your career by saying you're bisexual. You should have to have sex, you should have to upload videos of you fucking dudes and getting fucked by dudes. If you're claiming to be bisexual to get a spot on one of these shows. So I mean, God bless Pixie and her fidgets. This is for like Greta Thunberg. When she gets stressed out about the ozone layer, she can sit around and squeeze the stress ball and pop the pencil case. This is for her. This is for Greta. That's nice. Days after $1 million smash and grab, the great Lori Lightfoot walked out of a meeting with, quote, idiot luxury car dealer, and then a city inspector showed up with a ticket book. You followed this more than me. We love Lori Lightfoot. We support her. A Batman villain, a Dick Tracy villain, one of the greatest mayors of one of our greatest cities, Chicago, where the murder rate, I believe, is like half. It's like one out of every two people just get shot. The murder rate is literally half. It's a pie chart where half of it is dead bodies. What is going on with Lori?
So this guy, Joe Perillo, at Gold Coast Exotic Motors Showroom, he got $1 million in luxury watches stolen from him on December 11th. He's a well-known car dealer in town. He went on the local national TV news programs demanding that the city and county take immediate steps to curb crime. Lori was not pleased with this.
Now, how did he get the watches stolen?
People just broke in. It's one of those things.
They broke into where? The car dealership?
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And what does he got? He's got $1 million worth of watches in the car dealership?
I think some of the showrooms have like exotic.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. You got to sell the lifestyle.
So Perillo got Lightfoot's attention. Days after the smash and grab, Lightfoot walked into Perillo's showroom where Rolls Royce, Lamborghini, and Bentley models are on display. She wasn't there to buy. Instead, she met with Perillo, and according to two sources familiar with the conversation, it did not go well. One said that the famously abrasive mayor got into a fight and walked out.
I love her. I'll vote for her. I'll commit voter fraud to vote for her. I may buy a house in Chicago to vote for her. A day or two after Lightfoot walked out, Perillo's dealership received another visitor from the city, an inspector from the Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection. She brought her ticket book. What's great about Chicago is it's hopelessly corrupt and in a way that doesn't even try to disguise that. Lightfoot's spokesperson said the inspector was following up on an anonymous complaint. Who made that? That the city received on December 15th about a public health violation at the dealership. It was unrelated to the mayor's meeting with Mr. Perillo. Man, to be a fly on the wall, you know, because Lori Lightfoot walked in there and, you know, she's got that raspy voice. She was like, listen, you got a couple of fucking watches stolen. Shut your mouth. Shut your fucking mouth. You got beautiful cars outside. You got Bentleys. You got Lamborghinis. You got all this shit. And you got a couple of fucking watches. Aren't you insured? You don't have insurance for that? What the fuck are you doing? You some kind of rat? You're blaming this on the city? We got all these fucking problems. We got COVID. You know, she went at him. She went at him hard. And then she called up one of her goons and had the goon go in there with a ticket book and cite this guy.
Four tickets for six violations during her visit shortly after 2 p.m.
Yeah, only one ticket and two of the alleged violations are health related, which means the whole thing's fake. And Lori was just like, have this. So now he's going hard at Lori. Is there a poll with an approval rating for Lori Lightfoot?
Let's see here.
I mean, when was this? So
this was June, 48%.
In June, 48% of Chicago voters approved. But that's all fake, too. Who knows who they're asking?
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Here's July. Because she kind of went down really quick.
She went down quickly, which is sad. CBS Police Department dragged down Lightfoot's approval as Pritzker remains popular in Chicago. Yeah, I mean, I think eventually people get sick of it. Again, it entertains me, but I'm nowhere near it. See, Gavin Newsom's fucking everything up too, but he's just not as fun. He's just some good-looking douchebag who's indifferent to suffering and death. But Lightfoot is fun. So that's why I kind of get it. You know, why people are fun. I like what she does, goes down there, gives the guy at the car dealership the what for, and then has him ticketed.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boo. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Imagine you're in a deep, dreamy sleep. You're at work, but instead of one of you, there are suddenly two, then three, then 10, then 100, until 1,000 of you are working to reach your goal. Now, imagine it's not a dream, because what's actually happening while you sleep is the power of Agentforce, a limitless digital workforce independently thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks on your behalf around the clock and elevating only what needs your attention. No more time-consuming busy work, just the really important stuff, like making happier customers. So while you're dreaming about flying, missing a flight, or being naked in front of a crowd, Agentforce is working to make you a lot more efficient, like 1,000 times more efficient. That's Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest, building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving, it's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're here from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Massive California train looting prompts intense criticism of Democrats Gavin Newsom. So what's happening with these trains in California is people are looting them and trying to grab stuff from Amazon, right? They're trying to grab a Nintendo Switch, which Ray Kump got for me for Christmas, which was very nice. And thieves in LA are looting freight trains. Like, this is what you're, when you have fat friends, they just give you things to keep you fat. He's like, here's a Nintendo Switch. Never move. Now you don't have to leave the chair. Is the remote too stressful? Thieves in LA are looting freight trains filled with packages from UPS, FedEx, and Amazon. And look at this. I mean, you see the picture. Mm. You could play that. It's really crazy. But there's no real, is there any plan to get this state back in shape here? Doesn't seem like it. Mm-mm. Photos and videos showing piles of empty boxes littered alongside rail tracks in LA County have gone viral as shipping companies say they've seen a dramatic spike in railroad theft. Old school theft. Mm. People are going to start stealing horses next. Union Pacific, one of the largest railroad companies, said it may avoid operating in LA County following the spike in thefts, which it blames on lax prosecution of crimes. The containers and trains are locked but can be broken into. Yeah, well, they have the bail reform now. And they're not even letting Sirhan out. This is why I have a problem. If you're going to let everybody out, let Sirhan out so that he can tell us all about the MK Ultra program. And he can tell us all about whether it was Sidney Gottlieb or I forget. It was this Dr. Something West. Rogan talks about it. Dr. Jolly West, the CIA doctor, was running all the MK programs. I want Sirhan to tell us why exactly he shot Bobby Kennedy, because he probably doesn't even fucking know. So now, Gavin Newsom, did he write an op-ed? Why I will not release Sirhan on parole?
He did, yeah.
So January 13th, Gavin Newsom, someone wrote this for Gavin Newsom, probably the CIA, and emailed it to him, and then he emailed it to the LA Times. So this is Gavin Newsom, by the way, who cannot write and probably barely reads. In 1968, Sirhan assassinated Robert F. Kennedy just moments after Kennedy won the California presidential primary. Sirhan also shot and injured five bystanders. Decades later, Sirhan refuses to accept responsibility for the crime. He didn't know he was doing it. You see, his mind was hacked. Yeah, he doesn't accept responsibility. He doesn't know what the fuck happened. He came to standing in the Ambassador Hotel over a body. Can we find out why he was hanging out with Jolly West, CIA doctor? What? Can we get in there, please? But January 6th. Yeah, we get it. Okay, bad. But can we also get in this? Yeah, of course. He doesn't accept responsibility. Kennedy's assassination not only changed the course of this nation and robbed the world of a promising young leader, it also left his 11 children without a father. Too many children, by the way. Keep in your pants. Without a father and his wife, without a husband, Kennedy's family bears his loss every day. Millions of Americans lost. Do you think any of them are curious? Do you think any of the 11 kids are curious about what happened? I bet they're curious. Let's interview them. How about the 11 kids? You don't think they've stumbled upon the internet? You don't think they've read a blurb or two that makes them slightly, that everyone in their family ends up dead? Huh, everyone in our family ends up dead. Puh, what a string of luck. So Gavin Newsom is denying Sirhan parole. And we want to know.
Yeah, the board decided he was good for parole. And then
the board goes, let him go. Mm. Let him go. Sirhan recorded his plans to kill Kennedy, writing, RFK must die, RFK must be killed, RF Kennedy must be assassinated. Again, that's, yeah, sure. That can't be doctored. Nobody could have wrote that for him. Google Sirhan Jolly West. Oh, go back for a minute. Mm-hmm. Go back for a minute. Incredibly, in the 90s, Sirhan began dodging responsibility. He claimed he could not remember the crime. Stated he was innocent. In 2016, Sirhan said he believed he did not kill Kennedy based on what he has read, blah, 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 blah. Sirhan portrayed himself as a victim, claiming he was in the wrong spot at the wrong time. He's 77 years old, so he's a threat. Mm. Not the people stabbing the woman in the carpet place. He's a threat. He's almost 80, and they think he's going to go out and go on a shooting spree. I'd like to know why he doesn't remember the crime. I'm a little curious. Now, Google Sirhan Jolly West. Okay. I'm wondering about this, and I'm unsure, and somebody will correct me in the comments or whatever, but this period of history I'm relatively familiar with. I just don't want to say anything where people are like, you're wrong about that. But a lot of people believe there was a lot of fuckery in with that period of history where you were having like the CIA in league with cults, giving people acid, trying mind control experiments on them. And were they able to fuck a few of these people in terms of like, were they able to program these people to commit certain acts? Why not? So he remained interested in the subject of mind control throughout his career. As an expert witness, he examined a number of high-profile crime cases that were politically motivated or involved cults. After examining Lee Harvey Oswald's assassin Jack Ruby alone in his jail cell, West, Jolly West, concluded in 1964 he was suffering from a major mental illness, thereby narrowing down Ruby's possible motives. Other people he examined were Sirhan, Patricia Hearst, and Timothy McVeigh. Mm. Fun stuff, huh? Very odd. When aliens sift through the decay of this civilization and they piece all this together, man, are we, you know, and here's the thing, we'll all be dead and nobody will really know, and maybe even the aliens won't even do it because it'll all probably be lost. But like, if you ever got a full accounting of why things happen in this country and how they happen, I mean, you think TV shows are good? Like, you think House of Cards? People were like, I remember when I spoke to people that watched House of Cards and they were like, yeah, it's a little dramatic and it's a little unbelievable. I'm like, no. Yeah, it's unbelievable in the sense that like it makes things far too positive. It seemed, how many people did they kill? Four? Like, you have no idea. Yeah, it is unbelievable in the sense that like it's actually much worse. Mm. This is true, but we'll never get near any of this, right? I mean, nobody's ever going to come out and talk about any of this, honestly, and it's very strange. They're just going to deny parole. This is a state who's letting everybody out. They're letting violent criminals out that are young and violent and almost certain to commit crime. Again, violent crime. This is a 77-year-old who they let Hinckley out, and Hinckley was a weird situation, too. His brother, Neil Bush, was scheduled to have dinner with the Hinckley family, or was having dinner with them on the night that, or the day that John Hinckley decided to kill or attempt to kill President Reagan because he was in love with Jodie Foster. What? Strange. That's like me trying to kill Gavin Newsom because I'm in love with Melissa Etheridge. It doesn't make any sense. It's odd. But Hinckley's out, and he's doing music now. But they won't let Sirhan Sirhan out. Odd. What do you think of the studio? Are you happy? It's a beautiful studio. It's we're in beautiful. The desert. We might do every year a different climate.
A different terrain.
Maybe next year we do a polar vortex. And then the next year maybe we do temperate deciduous. Maybe then we'll do rainforest.
I would like rainforest.
You know, we got to keep it interesting and keep it fun. That's the thing here. Some people may be disappointed by the lack of neon sign, but when we have guests, the neon sign will be right behind the guests. Steve will do it from Nelk, the Nelk boys, a comedy sketch collective, moguls. They've released the Happy Dad Hard Seltzer. They're in the UFC area space a lot. They have a big podcast, the Full Send podcast. Steve will do it as their breakout star, who is a fun guy, will be our first official guest on Monday or Wednesday, but it'll come out next Monday. He's a big proponent of our podcast, a big fan. And, you know, I'm a little surprised by that, truly, in a good way. I'm surprised by that. I'm surprised that he enjoys this show so much because it's not a watch. Because watches are fun. They don't talk and they just glisten and they don't really talk about the news and you can stare at them and touch them. But he actually enjoys this show. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of it he understands. He may just like the pitch of my voice. He may just like the way I look and the way I kind of bop around on this. I don't know what he enjoys about it or not, but he seems to really like it.
He likes Tekashi too. I wonder if they watch together maybe.
I don't know. Let's not get greedy. But we're excited to have this guy on. He's very funny. Mm. He's insanely hardworking. He's a good person. He's always given people money and crypto and Venmo. And he is. He helps others. He sees people on the street and gives them a Bitcoin or gives them advice on how to gamble. I think that's good. And he drinks and smokes. And he's a real fun guy. So, no, I believe the Nelk kids, because what they do is if their people are homeless, they teach them about crypto gambling. And I think that's smart and helpful. So he's coming in hopefully on Wednesday. And I'm going to do Tana Mojo's podcast.
Oh, interesting.
On Tuesday. Tana Mojo is a influencer who's a fan of mine, and we appreciate that. Now, the reason I like her, and I've always liked her, is because she was born in Las Vegas. Now, I imagine that people who are born in Las Vegas just die immediately. But this woman has thrived. She's figured out a way to thrive as an influencer and OnlyFans. She's killing it on the OnlyFans. And she's funny. When you listen to her talk, she's kind of funny. She did a thing about a stalker that was climbing in her window and trying to kill her. But it was fun. And I'm going on her show because, and I don't do any of the influencer podcast. I mean, they don't ask me. You know, but like that Hype House show, and I talked a bit about it on the Patreon. Mind-numbingly boring. It's just dull. These kids are, I'm sure they're nice people. But here's the thing. The real show is fun. Like, they're creating this thing that isn't real. We want the behind the scenes. Show us the Adderall. Show us the drugs. Show us the fights with the parents. Show us everybody shit-talking to D'Amelio's because they've got the real money. Show us the real shit. But they don't do that. It's a very sanitized, safe, brand-friendly Netflix event. I want kids on the phone with their parents go, you're a fucking failure. You understand that? Fuck you. You know what's happening, Dad? I'm getting my cock sucked right now by 3 underage whores. Fuck you. What happened? You leave the factory early today? You fucking ne'er-do-well piece of shit. I'll send you 10 grand. Don't ever fucking call me again. Like, that's what I want. I want people just to be like, show us the monsters. Like, literally the whole show is just like, these kids have Lamborghinis and mansions, and they're like, sometimes I feel that I'm not as good of friends with everyone as I used to be. Who gives a fuck? Kill them. You're in LA. Light their house on fire. The reason you're not as good as friends with them is because you're breaking through. You're going to be big. Fuck them. What kind of shit is this? What, do you live in Minnesota? You're in LA. Take your Bentley and drive it through the fucking house. Stop this shit. Stop talking about how much you love your parents. What the fuck? If we want to watch a show about 17-year-old millionaires, I don't want to see how close they are with their goddamn family. You're supposed to be a fucking demon from hell. Like a tremor that crawled through the desert with a fang-laden mouth just trying to fucking get brand deals and bleed everybody dry. Nobody cares about your fucking anxiety. For Christ, be cool. Is it too much to ask? Stop talking about getting canceled and afraid how scared you are about online mobs. Say, fuck it, I don't give a shit. You can't cancel this, bitch. Like, dude, if I was directing that show, I'd be like, stand in front of that Lamborghini and say, you can't cancel this, bitch. And put a middle finger up and say, fuck yeah, I got health care. But it's boring. Why? Because it's not real. Why is Hollywood failing? It's not real. We know it's not real. We know you're not nice. You're 17 with a Porsche. You're not nice. There's a scene where one kid goes, should we take the G-Wagon or the Rolls? You're not nice. And if you are nice, what a waste. But you're not. We get it. We know you're not nice. We know you're not thinking of other people's feelings. We know that. We know that. And none of them really have, some of them have skills, right? Like the Alex Warren kid's funny and he has some skills, but like, and the little Huddy, the one who thinks he's a vampire, I guess he does some music, you know, but he's a vampire. He's like a vampire or something. He lives in this. And by the way, you really notice the real estate in this town is disgusting. These houses in Moore Park and Encino, these just disgusting caves where 70s era sitcom stars OD'd in bathtubs. It's really grotesque. And what is this?
It's their house, yeah.
But that's not their house. Hold on. Is this the new house?
Right here. This is it right
yeah,
there.
That's it. Listen. Yeah. Is that nice? Is that nice? Now I'm asking. Is this nice? Can you go to Little Huddy's house? Mm, that thing's terrifying looking.
It's a casita, right?
It's a casita. I don't know what the hell it is. It's an Applebee's.
I think they called it Huddy's Hacienda, right?
Huddy's Hacienda. Show that. Look at that. That's a theme restaurant at Disney World. You would put tables and chairs outside of that and serve fat tourist churros. This state is a black hole when it comes to culture. I'm from the Hamptons. Fuck off. I mean, look at that. You know, one of the kids in the show goes, it's like the surfer kid with the, he has like, his name's Jack Wright. He's like terrifying. So all he does is this all day. He goes, he just smiles, like, but it's very uncomfortable. You know, some people smile is like very uncomfortable. Sure. His smile is very uncomfortable. It's like, it's scary. And he goes like this. He goes, yeah, it's kind of like the Cheesecake Factory. I love the Cheesecake Factory. I love it. But my problem is they're all trying to be nice. The last thing you want to do when we're watching child millionaires, the last thing we want them to do is be nice. Show the real shit. We want to see vicious attacks. We want to see families being destroyed. We want to see, because otherwise it's not worth it. It's not fun. Sorry. I'd rather watch Lightfoot. I'd rather watch Lightfoot shake down a Lambo dealer in Chicago than watch these fucking kids live in a, you know, in a big Applebee's and they predict with a fucking lazy river and fucking dolphins shooting water and then have to go to bed every night going, oh yeah, and they're also really sweet. What? We know they're not. We know they're not. What Netflix probably has on the cutting room floor should be the real show. That should be the real show. The problem with these kids is there's like 19 handlers around them at all times telling them what they can and cannot say, right? Many of them love Trump. That's what's great. Many of them are QAnon. Like, we want that. We want 17-year-old. Like, Addison Rae was kind of a big Trumper because she's from Louisiana and she's got, you know, she's you know, this bitch likes a little bit of Trump. But nobody can be honest because she's such a brand now. But we want it. We want to see Addison Rae in a MAGA hat. That's what we want. She doesn't support Trump. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, listen, now you don't. You right. got money.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. You got a Netflix gives you a deal. I don't support him now.
But you did.
But that's the thing. Most of these kids are like right-wing fanatics. Why wouldn't they be? Mm. They've got $12 trillion. They were raised on like inspirational quotes and, you know, like, why wouldn't they be? So that's a lot more fun to see. Yo, like, Hillary eats babies, bruh. She's fucking babies. But it's a boring show. I wish everyone the best. I don't think they're going to get a season two. Like that D'Amelio show. I mean, it's all boring. It's mind-numbingly boring. We want chaos, carnage, and death. And if you can't give us that, step aside. Like Cheers coming back. One of the people in Cheers is a big pedophile. He's a dark web pedo.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, do they address that? Because that's fun. Not that he did it, but the addressing of it.
Let's see. They have to, right? I mean.
I hope they do. It should be every episode. The thing about Cheer is these kids are from some who cares part of Texas and they're cheerleaders and they have like 2 years and they jump around on a mat and then they go work at Sonic. But for those 2 years, they have really good lives and everybody respects them and all the young girls in Texas are like, I want to be like you, you know? And then eventually after the cheering, the mess starts, you know, they start, you know, their boyfriend starts getting, you know, throwing them into walls and things get real dark real quick. You know, they start doing Kill Tony. But how Cheer season two tackles Jerry Harris's sexual abuse charges. The season's fifth episode offers a timeline of the 21-year-old Navarro College cheer team's members' alleged sexual misconduct with two young teens, eventually leading to his arrest. Now, this is Monica, what's her name? Whitney's Aldama. Friends with her. She's a legend in cheerleading, and she's an attractive woman. Mm. And I know like her son, I think, on Instagram. And she's an attractive woman, and she's a beast of a cheerleading coach. Like everybody likes her. But, and it's not her fault, but one of her star cheerleaders was like Ghislaine-ing it all over. In January 2020, nearly 2 years before Harris was accused of child sexual exploitation and abuse in a lawsuit, he was prominently centered in the docuseries, first set of six episodes. So he was the one of the main characters. So now how do they handle this? Can we... this contains spoilers of season two of Cheer. But the season's fifth and middle episode dedicates itself explicitly to these allegations, his arrest, and the... So we're watching that one. Season two of Cheer, fifth episode. I'm in. His arrest and the eight counts of sex crimes involving minors. Eight! He's pled not guilty. So what they do is they do a Cheer, where they support having sex with people your own age. So they go, like, they do the thing on the head. They go, no, no. They go, little, no, no. Head, no, no. Little, head, no, no. If you're that tall, then breast, tall. I hope that's how they do it. Aldama recounted how she learned of Harris's sexual abuse allegations and the initial federal charge of producing child pornography during September 2020. Harris was federally charged with an additional seven counts in December 2020. I was on stage at Dancing with the Stars in dress rehearsal for our very first live show. The executive producer came up to me and showed me her phone and asked me if I'd seen the headline in the news that day, she recalled. It was like an out-of-body experience at the time. I felt like I couldn't breathe. I did the show, and then I went back to my trailer. I didn't even want to look at my phone because I was scared. I couldn't do anything about it, and I just didn't want to read it, she added, before revealing that the team had a meeting that night about the news, which she described as being a tear-filled funeral. Towards the end of the episode, the Navarro cheer coach reveals Harris sent her a letter, which she describes as optimistic, and features his desire to become a motivational speaker. Wait, what? Towards the end of the episode, the Navarro cheer coach reveals that Harris sent her a letter, which she describes as optimistic and features his desire to become a motivational speaker.
So I think that was the end of season one, is what they're saying.
I don't think so. Towards the end of the episode. We're talking about the episode.
God.
I believe it's, like, I think he's, wouldn't it be great? Oh, I used to fuck kids, but now I realize that I had to invest in myself. You can do anything you want to do. I remember when I was trapped in a prison of negativity. I was fucking kids. But then I realized that I could hustle and grind and figure it out. Wow. It's sad. It's sad for him that he's got this disease. It's sad for the kids. It's sad for Aldama, But here's what's not sad for. The viewers. We don't want, I hate, it's bad. It's not good. I don't even want to go into this because it's like, it's like stomach churning stuff. He's victimizing children, but
pleading not guilty. But
I mean, I'm going to watch that episode because it's the only episode I'm interested in because I don't really care about cheerleading or these people's lives. But seeing them all react to this is kind of interesting, right? Mm. I'm not saying I'm happy it happened. I'm clearly not. But as a viewer, to watch them react to this to me is interesting. How does a cheer team handle it? How does a Texas cheer team handle it? Here's the real reality. He's a pedophile. Did he take vitamins? Did he take NAD? Did he do NAD drip? Did he do high-dose vitamin C? High-dose vitamin D. Vitamin D cures pedophilia. Vitamin D cures pedophilia. If you take vitamin D, zinc, quercetin, and an ivermectin, you start fucking adults. Goodbye.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're here from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.